listeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon. Ahiahi Marie, everyone.
Hi to my everyone. We are past the winter solstice, which is the shortest day and the longest night.
I know it's to do with Matariki.
That's also
sort of. Is that around that time?
Yep. So it is coming up. You might be getting into your celebrations at the moment. So we're just going to have our episode today, a theme about that and celebrating our winter seasonal change. And I'll be talking about Arbor Day, which has actually passed, but this happens all around the world. So there'll be Arbor Days all over the place. And we'll go to Plant of the Week. And Karen, you've got something to share about your soil testing results.
Well, not really, because I don't understand them.
Oh, really?
That's what I was trying to tell you.
Oh, gosh.
I got this wonderful email from SoilSafe saying, oh, you know, your results are in. And I didn't understand them. I didn't. The labelling was all over the place.
Was it?
They didn't even follow my, I don't even know what they're talking about. I don't, it said drip line. I never wrote drip line on any of my front yard. Don't have a front yard. So I don't even know if that's my results. So, yeah, a little bit disappointed. But I'll email them and find out what's going on with that. Yeah.
So, listeners, the soil testing was the University of Auckland website. Yeah. You could send soil samples and then they'll test it for you for, is it heavy metals and other things like that?
Yeah, like it looked like arsenic and all the, like, you know, minerals, manganese, zinc, all that.
Trace elements.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, okay, that's a bit disappointing. I thought it would give you clear cut.
I'll let you know, though, yeah, because it would, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, let's talk about the winter solstice then. So we kind of passed that midpoint and our days are getting longer, which is good for us gardeners because that means we're getting ready for planting the spring, or getting ready for spring.
Yeah.
Well, you might all know about the rising of Matariki, the Seven Sisters star cluster, which you may need to watch out for in the early morning to see if the following season is going to be a good one for your crops.
Yeah, okay.
So if you're a game and you are seeing the dawn stars, those seven sister clusters, or actually nine now, apparently.
Oh.
And if they are shining really brightly, that means it's going to be a good warm season. If they are blurry and a bit faint, it's not going to be such a good season.
You sound like a hippie. What is the universe telling me?
Oh, the universe. It's our,
maybe the Maoris are a bit hippie-ish.
It's our...
I'll pass on that, thanks. But, I'm all for... I'll try and check out the... what is it? Pallades...
But you have to get up early in the dawn, so I'm not actually an early riser.
Nah, I doubt that's going to happen.
I'm sure other people will tell us. Yeah. It'll be all on the news. So, so we're talking about winter solstice, and there are some legends associated with it. And I actually found that there was another little story that wasn't to do with Matariki. It was about one Maori legend, and I'll read it to you. I wonder if you've heard of this, Karen. You might not have, but I hadn't heard of it before, so I might just share with you. They said... the sky god Rangi was the father of the sun god Rua, who had two wives. And story goes, in the summer, Rua lived with Hini Raumati in the south, and in winter with Hini Takurua in the north. They had two wives. On the day of the winter solstice, Rua left Hini Takurua to begin his journey to Hini Raumati. This was a time of rejoicing because it meant the harvest would soon begin. So people celebrated with a large fire, feasting and dancing. I haven't heard that legend before.
No, I haven't either.
No, so
they have quite a few, though.
So interesting, because, you know, what, two wives? One a summer one, one a winter one. I don't know.
Having multiple wives is, yeah, not an uncommon thing, especially in legends.
Yeah. But these days, some people have two homes and they go to their summer home and then they go to their winter batch or whatever it is. Yeah, a lot of, the wealthier people do. I don't have that, but you're lucky if you do, and if coronavirus hasn't affected your travel plans, then why not go to somewhere warmer?
Why not?
But us gardeners, we don't really get to get away. Some of us do, but...
Depends what kind of gardener.
Yeah, yeah.
A part-time gardener, like myself?
Yeah.
you sort of go away and come back and think, how long is the grass?
Yeah.
What's taken over? And I've been so busy lately just with work. I've had a bit on and I went out in my garden. I had a day off last week and I was like, whoa.
Has it gone boom?
You don't sometimes realise what's happening right in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So maybe
it's like the slow boiling of the frog situation where you don't actually realise how dire things have got. But, you know, there's a lot going on at our place. Like, we're getting our backyard redone with decking and stuff, and our friend Matthew's pretty rough.
Oh.
I don't know. What builder isn't? I mean, honestly, you know, I don't know. He's already trampled, half my plants along the decking. Yeah, you know what I mean? His wood kind of chopped off, half my cactus. Yeah, I'm kind of given up with that part of the garden at the moment. So, yeah.
I heard you were going away, Karen, and heading to the ski field.
Yeah.
So you're getting away.
But not somewhere warmer.
No, you're going colder. Yeah. This is the opposite.
I know. Auckland's tropical, really. I mean, at school today, I walked past we've got this huge MLE, modern, big learning environment, and they just had all the doors open, all the sliding doors and all that. Oh. Can you imagine? Middle of winter. All the doors are. It was a nice day.
Climate change, global warming.
I was like, this does not feel like winter. I don't mind letting a crisp breeze into my home.
Yeah.
I mean, my family members can't stand it. They're like, close all the doors, close all the curtains, what are you doing?
I'll keep the heat in.
Yeah.
I feel stuffy. I need to have ventilation.
I don't mind a nice crisp breeze. Oh. I'll just put on an extra pair of socks or whatever, put on my woolly hat.
Okay.
It's all good.
Speaking of, winter gardening, and maybe you don't want to do any, maybe you just want to have a holiday, but there are some things going on during the winter season. It's usually a good time to plant fruit trees, especially if they're bare-rooted, and get them established and before spring comes and they're all growing. And because the soil is nice and moist and they'll get them established.
Now would be a good time. Or maybe in the real cold areas, they'd be all right. Depends on the fruit, I suppose, as well.
So I was thinking about Arbor Day, which has passed, and officially in New Zealand it was June the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a different date in different countries around the world, depending on the season. So I had a look and see, what other countries celebrate? And some countries actually make it a national holiday.
Really?
Yeah, and some just observe it, and they have all these things going on. So I had a look at... some countries do some special things, like Japan has a greenery day, and it's not just planting trees, it's just everything plants.
So not surprised. Japan's awesome
They are really into their bonsai and all their cherry blossoms.
They're just a really forward-thinking country in many ways.
They can be quite obsessive, but it's a good obsessive.
Yeah.
So in New Zealand, we tend to do a lot of restoration projects.
On Arbor Day?
Around that time of year. So all those island sanctuaries like Te Tiri Matangi, Motuihi, and... all those ones we want the native birds to come back. So they have volunteer days or weeks that you can go and volunteer and plant trees. So the Department of Conservation does a lot of that, organising
it. But they do it not just on Arbor Day, though.
No, they do it at certain times of the year when they can get a whole lot of trees and natives and for everyone to plant. That's quite fun. And I was just actually did a planting day in my own reserve, my own street. We had a by our... My place backs onto a creek. Well, our street backs onto the Hurahura Creek, and around the edges we've done some native planting, and it was quite fun.
Oh, nice.
So we planted about hundreds of natives.
I bet it's going to look so good.
It was fun. I thought it was going to, I heard the rain fall really hard in the morning. Oh, no, it's going to be a washout, but it stopped in time for us to plant. Yeah. And it was actually a nice, lovely day.
And that would have prepared the soil perfectly as well, having that rain in the morning.
So if you're going to do a big, large-scale planting like that, it pays to do some preparation beforehand and get all your funding and all your native plants ready and tell everyone. So there needs to be a bit of sort of organising going on a few months beforehand to get that all set up. But you can apply.
You need to make it as easy as possible, don't you, for the volunteers?
Yeah. Yeah. So you can apply for funding from Eco Matters or, the DOC. You can apply. You can apply to, the Trees That Count government website where they...
That's if you want, an area
A mass
around
planting.
Your area.
Yeah.
Yep. Bulked up a bit.
Yeah. And you can get free seedlings on saplings.
Okay.
So give it a go.
I didn't realise that was a thing. I know about the tree planting, but I didn't realise anyone could apply.
I don't know how big an area it needs to be. There are certain criteria, but they want people to plant as many as they can. Even in schools, if you apply for the Ministry of Primary Industry, they have something called Tu Rako, and it is planting native memorial trees for New Zealand heroes. So instead of war memorials, you have tree memorials. And they need to be planted in places of significance like a park or a school or a marae. And they will give you funding to get that happening. So that's all cool.
Yeah.
It's the government is really encouraging us to plant more trees.
Yeah.
So, and even the forestry industry.
As long as they're in the right place, because if they're not in the right place, the government, the councils, I guess that's all related, all linked, they'll just bowl them down. I mean, I'm reading so many stories of people, chaining themselves to trees it's interesting because, it used to be real hard to chop down a tree.
Yeah.
But now
the
regulations have changed that so that... if your tree's drip line is a little a meter or something too close to a dwelling, it's got to go.
Oh.
Or, you can keep it there, but if someone says, I want that tree gone, they have every right.
Oh.
There's all these regulations now whereby you cannot have trees. It's hard to have a tree near your home.
That's funny because the New Zealand forestry website called loveyourforest.co.nz is saying we're supposed to be carbon neutral by 2050 and they want all the farmers to plant up theirs. Spare land or their not so productive land and trees.
Yeah.
And they're going to give them money to do that and maybe make pine plantations or whatever to help meet that goal. And they're pushing the pine plantations because apparently they absorb more carbon than indigenous forests. I'm not sure that's true, but I guess they want to make some money out of it as well. Mm.
I think the urban...
But
side of things
us in the city.
When you look at all the new developments, and there's a heck of a lot up here in Auckland, there seems to be less and less trees because the sheer maintenance. You've got to go for a small tree that's not going to...
Smaller trees, and shrubs.
But, I've read stories on Twitter, this is local, where people have just cut down, beautiful established core fires that have sort of been their focal point from their, say, lounge or kitchen or whatever
for ever since
they could remember. Oh. And then and home to Tui's and all sorts, and then it's chopped down and just been, like, writing, you know, saying, like, they literally cried the day that this tree that had been with them all these years was,
it's like,
yeah,
when Tree Hill got chopped down.
Oh, that was heartbreaking. It's getting, like, trickier. But I guess if you've ever had a tree fall on your house,
yeah,
or close to it,
be a bit. It's sort of like taking from Peter to pay Paul or something like
that.
All the cities.
So we'll plant more in the rural areas.
Yeah.
And to me, this is one of the things I love about living in West Auckland and there are areas where your brother lives.
Yes, Epsom.
There are lots of beautiful trees there.
Beautiful.
But it makes such a difference to me. Like, it's, I feel
more oxygen, more greenery.
Yeah, I can breathe, you know.
Yeah,
it's just,
you get
I do. But then, as my husband would say, I'm probably not the most practical person in that sense. Or, what's the word? He's probably thinking financially, how much is this going to. I have to, after seeing our neighbours that had lots of trees around their property.
Yeah.
The rigmarole that they had to go through to get these trees down, because I think they were too close and really high, it went on for over a week, man.
Aww.
And there were these chainsaws high up in the trees. It happened to be during a stormy week, and they were blowing around, and then they have to take a segment of the tree right from the top, chop that, then it falls down hanging by a chain, then that comes down, they break that up, and then the next segment, it went on. It was quite,
it's very tricky.
What's the word?
Convoluted. Complicated.
Well, yeah, entertaining. For over 1 to 2 weeks, we were staring out our kitchen window at the process. What a rigmarole. Oh. My goodness.
Well, if you're going to be doing that, you need to get a trained arborist. In terms of health and safety.
So, you kind of think,
it's very sad, though, because, well, the tree was there before, maybe
trees, but it was lovely having them just blowing. You look out your window and there's these established trees, beautiful.
Just going back to Arbor Day, some of the other countries, they do an Arbor Week and they get the schools involved in tree planting, so all the schools will go and do tree planting expeditions.
I've seen them do that at your school.
Yeah.
So, are they still doing that at Rānui?
They might do another planting out at Bethel, so that's cool.
And they did the stream down the side of the school. I think there's a stream there.
In India, they actually have a festival of trees called Van Mahotsava. It's actually an official festival. In Israel, they have two Bishvat, which is also similar, and they celebrate the olives and the pomegranates and all their special trees for their new year, which is Rosh Hashanah. So they are very into their trees because they have in the Bible that they would tithe the first fruits of the trees, if it was the first fruits or something like that. They couldn't touch the trees until they had their first fruit.
Because they would offer
the first fruit to God. So
they
very much care about trees over there. In some countries they have an Independence Day, like Niger has their Independence Day, and they plant a tree for Independence Day. So very symbolic. So our country, Matariki, part of Matariki is tree planting, having a hangi and remembering the dead in prayers, but a lot of it is preparing your garden and planting trees. So,
well, we need to start sort of thinking about spring. That's the thing with gardening, you've always got to be that sort of one step ahead.
Yes.
You can never really relax too much. You've got to always just
because it's going to be too late. The ground
will
be dry.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
I'm disorganised at best. And I'm a kind of a garden by the moment kind of less. So, it doesn't always work out.
Got to mark it in your diary. Plant some trees, because there's a quote that goes, the best time to plant a tree is yesterday, the next best time is now.
And, you know, one of the nice things about, tree planting is, you know, I think of my dad who passed away, when he was 2016, is that sometime? How do you know? I should know. Anyway, I feel like not that long.
Not a long.
Oh, that's not. It's like 5 years now. That's crazy. Anyway, but he was a big tree planter. He was a farmer.
Yes.
But always planted trees.
Yeah.
Trees. He had the farm was full of trees. Yeah. And even the other government farm that he managed, he was always planting trees all down the driveway, beautiful big rows.
Doesn't harm the paddocks, does it?
He wanted to provide the stock shade.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a bit of his legacy. Like when you go back there, he's gone, but his trees are still there, and I think of him.
Yeah. And you can actually graze animals under trees. Don't plant them too close together that they shade out everything.
Yeah.
But so pigs will happily graze among trees, and
the animals definitely use them.
Yeah. And it's good for the fungi, like truffles and like, you know, little mushrooms.
Oh, so when they poop under the trees and the trees enjoy
and
that.
And the trees provide mulch if they're deciduous. So it's all win-win if you've got the land. So I would say go for it. All right, Karen, let's go to our plant of the week because you've got an interesting one this week and I really want to hear about it.
Okay.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Yes, an onion patch.
Okay, so this week I pay homage to the persimmon, a fruit so full of surprises, shaped like a tomato but with a sweet, almost honey-like flavour. Oh. The persimmon is not your run-of-the-mill fruit. Do you like persimmon?
It has an unusual taste for me. I know my mum absolutely loves it.
Yeah, I feel it's like, it's the same sort of deal you get with, say, golden kiwi fruit. You either get people that like it or they just don't.
Mm.
And maybe tamarillos as well. You either like it or you don't.
Yeah. What camp are you in?
I like it.
You like it?
Yeah, I'm in your mum's camp. Yeah, big fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it grows from a tree. It's one of those.
It's actually a berry, technically.
Oh, but it's huge.
Yeah.
It's like an orange shape size.
Yeah.
No.
The persimmons we like to munch on are of the species Deospirus khaki.
Okay.
Deospirus. And Deospirus loosely means divine fruit.
Oh.
So that's not a bad nickname for something that resembles an underripe, oversized tomato.
Yeah.
But it is. It's yum. It's just got, to me, when you get a good one, it's like any fruit when it's perfect, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's like bliss. But it's got just the right amount of sweetness, no tartness.
Yes.
And it's just really easy to eat. Great to eat, like, maybe if you know how some days your tummy might be feeling a bit funny or you're not hungry.
Mm.
It's just a really easy fruit to get down.
Quite refreshing.
I mean, I think most fruits are, but it's just an easy fruit to eat.
Maybe I haven't had, like, the perfect one.
Mm.
Maybe I've had dud ones.
I'll get on to that. It's a deciduous tree. Originally hailing from Asian countries, so maybe this is something your mum had as a little girl
I'll ask her.
Yeah, she might have grown up with it.
Yeah.
Here in little old New Zealand, they grow well, suiting our subtropical climate. The main production areas are Gisborne and Auckland, but you will also find plenty of orchards dotted throughout the country. There are two main varieties of persimmon available, the Fuyu and Hachia. Fuyu is the most commonly found variant in New Zealand, with their season falling between April and May. So we've passed that, and I've been wanting to do this for a while, but what with all the sickness that we've had between us and Queen's birthday and guests, it just didn't quite... But, oh, I'm going to... Because I think if I do convince you to plant one, now would be the time.
Okay.
So
I know that
I think there's still
Mum definitely is looking for a good one to plant.
Cool.
Are you saying Fuyu is the good one?
Most common found variant.
Okay.
If you are about to sink your teeth into one, it pays to know which kind you are about to enjoy. Take a chunk out of an unripe hachia and you will get a mouthful of bitterness so powerful that it will take hours for your lips to unpucker. So maybe that's what happened to you.
Oh, okay.
So why are they so different? Well, it's because the hachia is an astringent species, while the Fuyu is non-astringent, meaning, I never remember what astringent means. It's like when something dries out. So actually persimmon... So if you have an astringent cream, that's good for maybe a septic wound that you want to dry up.
Is it like when you have acne and you want to put something on it to...
Yeah, to dry up the area so you can get some healing happening, clearing. And it's funny that because persimmon actually means, in I think Latin or something, dry fruit. So maybe that's because the person that named it had it on the wrong day.
It's kind of like a sponge, would you say? It's a spongy.
I think it's just because it's quite got a... Yeah, it's not spongy. It's just like if you cut it open and it's not ready, how can I describe it? What would it be like any other fruit?
Would it be gooey?
Maybe like, you know how maybe pineapples when they're not ready?
They're
quite firm and dryish.
Okay.
So... Both persimmons contain high amounts of tannin, and this gives them the bitterness, and this will disappear as the fruit ripens. The Fuyu persimmon loses tannins more quickly, meaning you can happily enjoy it before it's totally ripe. So that's the difference. The Hachia, on the other hand, needs to be 100% ripe before it's palatable. So you need to wait until they are soft and squishy.
Okay, so...
How can you tell which one you're getting? The Hachias are usually paler and tend to be heart-shaped, whereas the Fuyus, and that's the one that I go for, is more squat-shaped, like a tomato.
Okay.
What's in it? Lots of manganese, 17% of your daily recommended intake, although you don't need much manganese in your diet, to be honest. You only need a small amount.
Mm.
There is also a substantial amount of vitamin C, iron, and vitamin A, and the fibre content is generous too, providing twice as much fibre as that of an apple. Best ways to enjoy your persimmon, you can eat it just like you would an apple, but I like apples like the skin off, personally. It's my preference. They are, in America, they include them in desserts, like, say, a pumpkin pie type thing. And try slicing it in a salad or adding it to a smoothie, mixes in really nicely, not too overbearing. Or even, I haven't tried this, a cake mix. I'm thinking maybe, you know how people have been lately been putting zucchinis and stuff that into cake? I'm wondering if it's like maybe, it goes very soft, like zucchini.
Yeah.
Anyway, worth a try. Have some fun with it.
Okay.
And get it in the ground now if you want to.
Yeah, I will have to go and have a look in King's or somewhere to, check it out.
Yeah, somewhere sunny, I would say, because they're like subtropical.
All right, gardeners.
Most fruit trees like
sun. Get into your tree planting and looking forward to next season. So, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Happy gardening, everyone.
All right, guys. See you later. Bye.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.